Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come. I am Sean Kane, I am your host, and I apologize that Friday's pod is late. I know most people are used to seeing it first thing in the morning. Fern and I both had commitments last night, so apologies there for the delay. But without further ado, let's go ahead and jump straight into tonight's full 15-game slate, and then we'll get into the player breakdown with my man Josh Fernandez. All right, so first game of the night, Reds, Nationals, 9 runs projected here. Wind blowing out, a nice balmy 86 degrees in D.C. tonight. Luis Castillo, prospect pitcher for the Reds, coming up to make his first big league start against Strasburg. Nats are heavy favorites in this one with almost 5.6 runs projected. Definitely interested in the Nationals tonight. I think that this Castillo character is a good pitcher, but not perfect just yet. So definitely have some interest in the Nats bats here. And I, you know, not too much interest in Strasburg. Even though Vegas likes him here in this spot, I don't know necessarily that I'm going to go there. I think there's a lot of other really good options on the slate. Rangers, Yankees, 10 runs projected here. Darvish versus Tanaka. This should be an interesting matchup, but I'm going to give the edge to the Rangers, who are swinging some really hot bats right now. Carlos Gomez, Adrian Beltre, Rougned Odor, those guys are just really getting it done. We saw them put up a lot of runs in that Toronto series. I think they continue the hot streak here against the Yankees. Even though Vegas likes the Yankees in this spot, that line is moving. People are betting Rangers right now because Tanaka is a gas can. It's official. Minnesota Twins versus Indians. 10 runs projected here as Adalberto Mejia goes up against Trevor Bauer. Mejia is bad. The Indians aren't that great against lefties, and there's a lot of weather risks in this game. I don't know how much Indians I want, but they are projected for 5.7 runs. They're expensive. They've been really popular lately. I don't mind them. I don't know if I love them. As for Trevor Bauer, no thanks. You know, I the Twins against a righty, they're not that great, but they're not that bad either. So I'm not in love with Bauer, especially with all the other options on the slate. Angels, Red Sox, 10.5 runs projected here in Fenway. Wind blowing out at 16 miles per hour. Alex Mayer going up against Rick Porcello. The Red Sox are projected for almost 6 runs. Now, I don't know. I mean, the way the Angels have been playing lately, we saw them take advantage of that small ballpark in this New York series. I don't mind the Red Sox here against Alex Mayer, but I think if we're comparing these two pitchers, Mayer, for my money, has been trending in the right direction, while Porcello, not. So I'm definitely not interested in Ricky Porcello, but you have two pitchers at 8-4, and one of whom is been playing really well, and the other one is getting absolutely lit. So I'm interested in the Angels. You get a lot of cost savings, probably a little bit of leverage. Fern is going to talk about the Angels in this spot against Porcello as well. Cubs, Marlins, 9.5 runs projected here. The Cubs stack was a fucking barn burner last night, man. They just crushed, absolutely destroyed the Marlins last night. I was on the wrong side of that one. I thought maybe these Cubs road woes would continue, but they're destroying lefties right now, and it was the righties that were doing it. So I'm sure that they'll be popular again against Jose Urena. They have 5 runs projected in this one, and Lackey's getting the start here. And for me, I'm going to go back to Justin Bour here against Lackey. He hits Justin Bour. Check out Justin Bour BVP versus Lackey. It's a very small sample, but it's very clear that Justin Bour is going to be the home run problem for John Lackey. Baltimore Orioles, Tampa Bay Rays, 8.5 runs projected here, which is a very small number considering the Orioles will be starting Ubaldo Jimenez. The Rays are projected for 5 runs against Ubaldo. Ubaldo, you bad, though. He is very bad at pitching. So we are stacking the Rays. We love the Rays. We love the Rays against righties. We love the Rays at home. And I love Chris Archer at home. This is a really good spot for Archer. Should get the run support. Should be able to take advantage of these slumping Orioles in this one. Brewers Braves, 9 runs projected with Jimmy Nelson going up against Mikey Fultonevich. This is a great spot for the Brewers, I think. But, you know, who knows? They are very tilting. They are hard to get a read on. And they're certainly not been very productive in the last series that they were just in. But they're very reasonably priced. Everybody 3-4, 3-1. The prices are pretty reasonable on the Brewers here. And Jimmy Nelson is a fucking animal. His numbers right now are just unbelievable. So certainly have some interest there. A's, White Sox, 10 runs projected in this one. Makes sense. Wind is blowing out at Guaranteed Rate Field, and we got Jarrell Cotton versus Mike Pelfrey. It's just about a pick 'em. Strangely enough, the A's are favored by just a touch. I don't think so. I mean, for me, the White Sox are the team that is way more threatening right now. And, you know, while Cotton has been good and just pitched a gem against, gem is a strong word. But, you know, pitched 6 Ks, 6 innings, with only 2 dingers allowed, in the, Yankee game. The White Sox are just hitting too much. They're hitting everything right now. So I'm interested in some White Sox bats here against Cotton. I think this is a good spot. Pirates Cardinals, this is a good spot as well. But mostly for the Pirates. Wainwright has been getting blown up, but the Cardinals are home favorites, which I think that line is going to move, but it's not the best fantasy spot. 9 runs projected with Jameson Taillon going up against Adam Wainwright. Could be one of those, you know, annoying 3-4 type games that we're so accustomed to seeing from these types of teams. Blue Jays Royals, 9.5 runs projected is J.A. Happ going up against Jacob Junis. Jacob Junis, not particularly great pitcher, and the Blue Jays are getting over 5 runs here. I just don't know necessarily how much I want to play the Blue Jays in this gigantic ballpark. There has not been a lot of scoring going on in this Royals homestand. J.A. Happ, meh. I could talk myself into some righties on the Royals for sure. Phillies D-backs in the desert here. The Diamondbacks at home. Got to play the Diamondbacks at home. Got to look at them. They are getting 6 runs against Mark Leiter Jr. Patrick Corbin getting the start for the Diamondbacks. Leiter is a reliever who's going to go into his first start here. His strikeout rate has been terrible. Absolutely terrible here recently. It certainly is a good spot to go to the Diamondbacks. I think when we're getting them at this discount of, you know, for being at home, I think that this is a good spot to go to them. And, you know, hey, the Phillies are sleepy. They're inexpensive. They're in a great ballpark. I think that you could definitely go to the Phillies here. I don't know. I mean, they went up against Corbin not long ago and did not do shit. So I would understand if you're not interested. Tigers Padres. This one is the lowest total on the slate at 7.5 runs. Michael Fulmer and Luis Perdomo. Fulmer's a small favorite here, but Vegas is really saying this one's going to be a real bore. So I have no problem. With the pitchers here, I have no problem with Fulmer or Perdomo. I think Fulmer's price is a little bit high, but I do like his upside in this situation. Astros Mariners, 9.5 runs projected here. Joe Musgrove going up against Big King Felix. He's returning from the DL, so this will be an interesting game. I think this one will go low owned for sure. The Mariners always do. The Mariners games always go under owned, and I think the Astros certainly could take advantage of Hernandez here. So, you know, underpriced Astros include, but are not limited to, Josh Reddick, and that's it. Josh, everybody else is over 4K. Yuli Gurriel is not bad at 3-2 either. Astros are expensive. They're really expensive. When you're always putting up that many runs, they're expensive. But Musgrove is certainly targetable with lefties. So, you know, Gamel, Cano, Seager are interesting to me here, and they continue to be very reasonably priced. How Ben Gamel is more expensive than Robinson Cano makes little sense to me. But he did have a decent game last night. I was watching that one, and he had a decent game there. Rockies Dodgers, 8 runs projected here as Kyle Freeland goes up against Alex Wood. The Dodgers are heavy favorites here, and Wood is in an excellent spot against the Rockies. He's one of my favorite pitchers on the slate. The numbers are excellent, and the Rockies are certainly susceptible to get beat up here a little bit. Mets, Giants, 8.5 runs projected here as Seth Lugo goes up against Ty Blatch. Neither of these pitchers are good. But you got a gigantic ballpark. I guess the Mets are much more interesting to me than the Giants. I wanted the Mets to wake up last night. They woke up just a little bit. Maybe they're getting a little bit more comfortable with this road trip. And Ty Blatch is a pretty bad pitcher. So I could certainly see us starting some Mets righties who are probably under-owned and inexpensive, in this one. That's interesting to me. Wilmer Flores at 2-6, batting second. That's just a really good spot. Curtis Granderson's been hitting leadoff home runs. He's basically doing his Anthony Rizzo impression. So dive a little bit deeper in there. But remember, we always have leverage on these West Coast road teams. So certainly have some interest in that spot. All right, that's it. 15 games, man. Whoo, massive slate. Tons of spots, tons of good pitching. Fern and I are going to dive into some of our favorite spots. We are definitely looking for leverage on this slate. So, there's some very clear, obvious things that I think people are going to like. We're talking about some of the overlooked spots, some of the things that might help you get leverage or savings, that kind of thing. So we're going to dive into it and break it down. Without further ado, my man Josh Fernandez, let's jump into the player breakdown and figure out who we love. Who do you love? All right. We're going to jump into the player breakdown here, and I've got my man, Josh Fernandez. Of course, we're not recording late Thursday. We've got Friday morning today. I know there's probably some people scratching their head right now, Fern, saying, wait a second. Usually I wake up and I got Sean and Fern in the mornings, but we had to push it back to today. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, man, I'm good. I'm good. This is new for us doing Friday morning, but it's a couple reasons. Like, A, I'm not working for the next couple weeks because don't have to teach summer school for a couple weeks. So it's daddy and the boys every day here at the casa. And then you had a rager at your house last night.
Yeah, man, I was the chef de cuisine of my wife's like work party. So yeah, we had a massive thing for all my wife's coworkers.
So I timed this perfectly because as I mentioned, I've got the kids, you got the two boys too. Yep. So my son is currently like bouncing around on the couch watching cartoons, and the baby is sleeping. So I think we got a nice window here to break sucker down.
Let's do it, because this is a 15 gamer and it's a monster. Everybody is in action. You've got some really good pitching out here, and you've got some offenses, tons of offenses projected over 5 runs. Vegas likes a lot of teams. So, there's going to be some big scores tonight. There definitely are a lot of different directions you can go, as there are always on these 15 game slates that we get on Tuesdays and Fridays. So let's jump into the arms here. Fern, I've got two guys here that I think are relatively obvious, but and they're kind of comparable, but I really trust, and the other one I have a little bit less trust in. The first is Alex Wood. He's got the Rockies at home. And actually, I think this is my favorite pitcher on the slate. So Wood at home, like, listen to these splits.
2.1 xFIP, a 1.8 ERA, a 32% K rate, 5% walk rate, and has not allowed a single home run all year long. Now, you listen, you hear the name the Rockies, you think about this team that's been really good this year, surprisingly powerful, they seem like a tough matchup, but they're really pretty mediocre against left-handed pitching away from Coors. 32% hard contact, that's very average, a 93 WRC+. They're actually worse than the San Francisco Giants away from Coors Field. Like, this team just, I think that people think that they are really, really, really good. They're not as good as people might think. In Coors, Wood already pitched this game. He went 6 innings, did not give up a single earned run, and 10 Ks. He gets to go home to Dodger Stadium, where he has been excellent. And I just don't see any reason that we don't have to, that we don't, you know, look at Alex Wood here in this matchup as, you know, an elite pitcher. And for 9.5, like, he's not the most expensive pitcher on the slate. So I love Alex Wood in this spot, as does Vegas. The Rockies are only projected for 3.1 runs, which is amazing.
Yeah, I was drinking the midnight oil, burning that would hurt my stomach. I was burning the midnight oil last night. If you were on Twitter like super late, you saw me like shit posting a bunch of graphs from FanGraphs. But man, I was looking at just some visualizations of Alex Wood's performance this year, and he's just mind-blowingly good. And I got to echo what you said, Sean. I made the same observation on my personal notes here. The Rockies are not remotely terrifying as a team offense, as they are in Coors. And honestly, like, you know, if it wasn't for the Coors effect, I mean, they would just be a middling offense, which is kind of surprising considering, you know, Blackman and Arenado and then the other guys who are, you know, solid players, Cargo, Reynolds. But, you know, I think it's just they don't turn over that lineup very well.
Yeah.
And I think that Wood is going to just, you know, eat him up. That's a great call. I love Alex Wood. Absolutely. My guy is another pitcher in a pitcher's park, a National League West park, and that's Michael Fulmer of the Detroit Tigers. He's going out west. The Tigers are on their road trip. And, you know, here's the thing about the Tigers. They are in the midst of a serious slump right now. A nice losing streak of, I want to say, 7 or 8 games. Did they lose? They lost last night, I think, right?
Yeah, in Seattle. They did. Yeah.
Yeah, so I can't tell you exactly how many games it is, but it's I think it's like 6 or 7, maybe 8 game losing streak, and they need to put an end to that. And you know, who do they get but the San Diego Padres? I think San Diego has gotten lucky lately scoring runs. If you look at their team stats over the last couple weeks, you know, as far as like run production goes, they're pretty efficient in producing runs. I like to take runs scored and divide by plate appearances to give me like a runs per plate appearances metric, and that kind of tells me like scoring efficiency in addition to WRC+. And that is a team that, yeah, they're scoring some runs lately. But if you look at all their other metrics, they're still the same old Padres, striking out a lot, you know, not really threatening anyone with power. You know, really the only guy against right-handed pitchers that is a remote threat in, you know, based on my research is Franchy Cordero. I didn't know who the hell Franchy Cordero was until like, what, a couple weeks ago.
Right.
So as long as Michael Fulmer, a stud pitcher, can hold down Franchy Cordero. It just sounds funny saying that. As long as he can hold down Franchy Cordero, there's really nothing on that team that can truly threaten him from going deep into that game, racking up Ks. Looking at Fulmer himself, you know, his statistics, you know, I mean, the underlying statistics tell us that he is the stud we think he is. But he's getting unlucky with his BABIP lately. So teams are kind of just like, you know, going oppo on him and dinking in some runs, and you know, luck is in his opponent's favor lately. But I just don't see the Padres being able to hang with him. And so I, you know, like you love Alex Wood as your top stud pitcher on this slate. Michael Fulmer is my locked in cash stud for me, and I just don't see any reason why he and Alex Wood can't just have epic starts in this massive slate.
Yeah, I mean, my eyes immediately gravitate towards a righty against the Padres, especially when they're in that massive ballpark, you know. And I think, you know, Fulmer has had some tough outings for sure. You know, he's been great in some spots. He's been, you know, not so great in other spots. But, you know, he's got good stuff. Like, you know, his K rate is down, but he's limiting the walks. You know, his XFIP and Sierra are relatively average, but I think that, like you said, like a good matchup with the Padres is probably a good spot for Fulmer. I mean, every single one of his pitches is grading out as above average, according to PitchFX data. So I like Fulmer as well. I think, you know, I mean, we, and Fern, at the end of this, we got to talk about Strauss, because I don't know if I can touch Steven Strasburg right now, but I am in love with Chris Archer tonight as well. I mean, we watched this series in the Cleveland series. These righties with strikeout upside just light this Baltimore roster on fire at home. Like, Carrasco goes for 10 Ks. Kluber goes, you know, deep into that game. Both of them had over 50 fantasy points. You know, just last Friday, we started Carlos Martinez against them. The Orioles just aren't making hard contact. Without Chris Davis in the lineup, they really don't have a lot of threatening lefties. Yes, there's still a lot of righties that hit righties, you know, Adam Jones and
Scope,
you know. Yeah, John Scope and Manny Machado, of course. I mean, Manny Machado is a great batter. He's been in a slump. The whole team is in a slump. So enter Chris Archer at home in Tampa Bay. He's an animal. 30% K rate, 13% swinging strike rate, K to walk ratio of 22%. His hard contact, yeah, that's a problem. It's 38%. But the way he throws, man, he, you know, every once in a while he gets dinged. And that's pretty much what you expect. Like, you're going to get one, somebody's going to probably hit a home run off of him. But it's, the interesting thing is it's the lefties that he really struggles with. And like we said, you know, Chris Davis remains on the DL. Add to that, that Archer has some of the best home road splits in Major League Baseball. His home splits are filthy. You know, Tampa Bay is one of the better pitcher's parks in baseball during this time of year. When everywhere else is warming up, Tampa Bay is always 71, 72 degrees, and it has a pretty big outfield. So he has a 35% K rate at home with a 5% walk rate. His ERA, his XFIP, they all drop by almost a full 2 points in the trop. So basically, like we talked about, you got to get around John Scope. You got to get around Seth Smith, who actually, Seth Smith has been hitting the ball pretty well in the leadoff spot. He hit a homer last night as well. But there are Ks throughout the rest of this lineup, and I think that Chris Archer could provide a whole lot of upside tomorrow night. And I believe he is, what's his price?
He is, getting it right now, 10-4.
Yeah, 10-4.
That's so right not between Strauss and Fulmer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I love that price for any pitcher. It, you know, that allows you pretty wide range of flexibility with your bats. So
yeah, I love it, man. I mean, you know, watching that game yesterday, the first inning, Seth Smith leads off with a homer off Clevinger. And I thought that, you know, the O's are trending back up and Machado's barreling it up lately. Scope's been a beast all year. You know, Trumbo at some point needs to get his head out of his ass. And, you know, I just, you know, I went off and did something else, and I look at my phone and 5-2, and it's like, geez, man, like they can't buy a win, you know, and they continued their streak of giving up five or more runs for what is it, like a billion straight games. So the O's are just, I mean, it pains me to say it, but they're like the one of the most targetable teams right now with strikeout righties, especially, and then of course bats against their starting pitchers. So, and we'll definitely talk about Ubaldo yeah. Jimenez in a bit. Right. But if there's one saving grace for them is as far as BVP goes, I know we don't really care much about BVP, but it's worth mentioning that Scope has really nice BVP against Archer. I had a spreadsheet, then I deleted it, but I made a note of it on my notes here. Of course, I didn't include the actual numbers, but I bolded John Scope. So at 2 o'clock in the morning, I noticed that Scope has good BVP against Archer. So maybe in a GPP as a one-off, you know, no one's going to be on him. He's $3,500, but he's having a good year, and he's got some serious bat speed to catch up with some of those Archer heaters. Exactly. But you know what? You're right, man. Archer's going to kill him. He's going to kill him. A guy that I think is more under the radar, but people really need to be taking notice of this gentleman. It's Alex Meyer of the LA Angels of Anaheim going against Boston. Alex Meyer, if you look at his swinging strike rate and his hard and soft contact over the last month or so, he's been really trending in the right direction in those areas. I mentioned to you before we started recording that if you go to FanGraphs, you can generate graphs based on different statistics and different parameters. And so I was poking around with Meyer. And, you know, for those of you that know how to read some stock charts, you know, even if you don't know, when the line is going up, that's good. And yeah. His line for his swinging strike rate has just gone up, 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 up all season. I mean, he's getting guys to swing and miss. And if you just look at his statistics over the course of the season, I mean, this is a guy with a 27% elite, 27% K rate, an 11% swinging strike rate. You know, he is limiting hard contact, getting a lot of soft contact. His one issue is that he does give up a lot of walks and doesn't throw a lot of first pitch strikes. The benefit here, though, for him is that Boston is just not an explosive offense. They're an efficient offense, you know, sort of like the Padres have been lately, you know, scoring runs but not killing anybody with power. They're not a stackable team by any means, in my opinion. I mean, rarely can you stack Boston four or five guys if you're on DraftKings. But they're a nice little, like, one-off or mini-stack team. And so, I mean, when you have a team like that, like, that's a team that, yeah, you know, the outing is not going to be epic for Alex Meyer just because they don't strike out a lot, you know. But the thing with him is he's just trending in such a positive direction. And here I got my son sitting next to me in a laundry basket just staring at me. So let me finish talking about Alex Meyer, buddy. Hey, everybody, how you doing? Fatherhood. But yeah, so just to wrap up this whole Alex Meyer thing, I like him a lot. 8,400, you know, it's not cheap. It's not expensive. He's trending in all the right directions. Boston's not a very explosive or devastating offense. I mean, if I was going to use anybody on Boston, I'm looking in Jackie Bradley Jr.'s direction. You know, he's been really barreling up the ball lately, getting some nice contact, doing a lot of work with his plate appearances. You know, Hanley is on the mend, you know, and just from what I was looking at, you know, Sandy Leone came up as a possible option at catcher. But everybody else, you know, I mean, Xander, you know, Mookie, like, I just, they don't really scare me that much. They really don't. And so I feel like Meyer could be a super low-owned, super sneaky, you know, large GPP option, and can really differentiate you a lot from the pack.
Yeah, he absolutely is going to be sleepy because this line favors the Red Sox in a massive way.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that because I just completely overlooked that as I'm staring at this child in a laundry basket next to me. Yeah, is it six runs still?
Yeah, they're almost projected for six runs, which I feel like I don't know. That seems fishy to me, but like, you know, here's the thing. Meyer is absolutely headed in the right direction. Here's my only concern, Fern, and I don't know if you share this worry. Are you worried about the fact that the Red Sox just don't strike out?
See, that's the thing. I am a little bit worried about that. But over the last 14 days, I'm looking here at Boston's strikeout rate. And they're creeping up. Like they're 18.5% K rate. And Meyer is 27%. So let's just call it in the middle and say that it's 22%. I mean, if he can face, you know, like 25 batters, I mean, that's what, 6-7 Ks, you know? Right. I mean, if he can get 6 or 7 Ks and limit the earned runs to 2-1, I mean, and hopefully get the quality start. I mean, I agree with you. They don't strike out a lot, but, you know, anybody can get lucky once in a while with a few instances and get yourself a few gimme. I have to look at the umpire. That's the other thing. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go look it up right now and waste all your time.
The thing that we have to remember is Meyer has a pretty filthy curveball. And what you have to consider, I think, with that is whether or not the Red Sox are a team that is going to bite on the curveball. And I think that's an interesting question to pose. So, you know, that there's a couple good spots here. But what do we think about? I think people are going to gravitate towards Strasburg just because of the name value. I don't know if I can go there. His last two starts have been fishy at best. He hasn't made it into the sixth inning. He's got Cincinnati at home. You know, I mean, Cincinnati is one of those offenses that, can they get it going? Yeah, they can. I don't know necessarily that you're always scared of them, but he hasn't gone past the sixth inning in his last two starts. He's given up a number of hits. What are your thoughts about Strauss here?
Yeah, first of all, like Nats Park in the summertime plays really small. You know, I was listening to the telecast recently, and the broadcasters were talking about that issue, and it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people view it as, I think it's like a neutral park based on park factor. Not completely sure, but you know, when the weather warms up, that park plays really small, you know, especially right field. You know, there's the short-ish porch. You know, it's definitely no Yankee Stadium. But, you know, balls fly out of that park in warm weather. And here in the D.C. area right now, it's pretty warm. It's pretty humid. The game's going to be in the 80s. And Strauss is very well known for not performing well in sticky, hot weather. You know, I mean, yeah, people just need to be aware of that. Like, he's just not a good hot weather pitcher. He's much better in cooler conditions. And it's a verifiable fact, you know.
Right.
I can't remember who posted it on Twitter, but there was something with, like, when the temperature is over, like, 90 degrees, his ERA for his career is like 6 or something. I can't remember exactly what it is. It's not going to be 90 degrees tonight, but it's going to be pretty nasty. And the other thing too is the Reds have some nice left-handed bats, and Joey Votto has really nice BVP against him, as does the GOAT, Scooter Gennett.
Scoot.
Yeah, buddy. So they have a couple guys, you know, that have some experience facing Strasburg, and Votto has done a lot of damage to him. And yeah. Votto is really hitting the ball hard, as is the norm for him. So I have this suspicion that Stras is going to go, you know, pretty high owned. Like, I wouldn't say like chalky, but right. enough where if the Reds get into him, that'll knock off a good 10-12% of the field in GPPs.
I would agree with that. I can't trust him. I would much rather pay down for Chris Archer. The lefties are getting to him, and Joey Votto alone could create a problem. There's always strikeout upside, but you know, I keep talking about this number, Fern. Four runs. If a pitcher allows four runs, you are immediately losing upside on FanDuel. Okay, the combination of a couple of things. One, you're minus 12 points just for the runs alone. Okay, then you're going to lose the 6 points for the quality start if he even makes it into the sixth inning, right? Which, when you get up four runs, you could very well get pulled before the sixth. So all of a sudden, you're down 18 points on the field because your pitcher has given up four runs versus, you know, a pitcher who possibly pitches six innings of clean baseball. So, you know, that four number is just way too scary for me with Strasburg against the Reds right now. Moving on to some, like, pivot pitchers, some dart throws here. I have some interest, and this could really come back to bite me, but I have some interest in Perdomo against the Tigers in this one, and I think it's just because he is so good against right-handers. Luis Perdomo against right-handed bats this year has a wOBA allowed of 317. With an xFIP of 3.1, he has a K rate of 23% against righties, and he's induced 70% ground balls against right-handed bats. You get this massive ballpark, all sorts of righties in this Detroit lineup. Yes, they hit hard. I love playing the Tigers even against right-handed bats, or excuse me, against right-handed pitchers. But I think that as far as leverage goes, you have a massive, massive leverage spot. He's 3.8 ground ball to fly ball against right-handed bats. This guy is an elite ground ball pitcher. You add to that the fact that at home he has been even better. His walk rate goes down at home. His home run rate goes down at home. I just think that Perdomo against the Tigers, I think the Tigers could be in for one of those very long, frustrating nights where they just ground out, you know, and this game is projected as one of the lowest scoring on the slate. And there's a reason, you know, the Tigers are projected for under four runs, and it's because of Perdomo's splits against righties. So I could get into some Luis Perdomo in this spot. I think he will come low owned just because I think people are scared of what the Tigers offense can do. But at 7-2, I mean, you can literally take any sort of bats that you want at that price. So I'm interested in Perdomo for sure.
I don't disagree with that, but and my internet is being weird right now, but I'm trying to look it up. But I have Dinelson Lamet as the starter.
Fangraphs is showing me Perdomo, as is RotoGrinders. Let's look at MLB.com. MLB.com is always.
Yeah, that's what I'm sitting there and it's just spinning. I can't get it to load.
Let me see.
Because if it's Perdomo, I like that spot a lot more than Lamet.
Yeah, Lamet, I mean, as much as that kid has, you know, as far as potential. Lamet, yeah, MLB.com is showing me Perdomo.
Okay. So, all right. Yeah. So, yeah. So then that changes things because on my notes I had Lamet. And, you know, as far as Lamet goes, he's a big strikeout guy, but he gives up a lot of hard contact. And Detroit would, I think, crush him. So hopefully they get to play him this weekend. But yeah, no, that Perdomo call is not bad, actually. I kind of like that now that I think about it in a different light than with Lamet I was initially looking at. Not bad. I am kind of in the same boat as you, as a kind of like a scary proposition here for a lot of you. And what I'm proposing is Luis Castillo against the Nationals. Now, you might be wondering who Luis Castillo is. Is it our friend Luis Castillo from the 90s and early 2000s, second baseman of the Florida Marlins? And remember him?
I just love that you just said Florida Marlins.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, God. And now the Miami. I mean,
back in the Jack McKeon days.
Oh, my God.
When a man could smoke a cigar in the dugout, everyone be damned.
I had, so for whatever reason at my old job, we had a box of McCann, his autobiography, which was like titled like after the Frank Sinatra song, My Way.
Yeah.
And he's sitting on the cover in a Marlins hat, the 90s like turquoise Marlins hat with a cigar and his World Series ring.
I just miss like really old dudes as managers.
Are you kidding me? Come on, dude. The Mets, they still have the oldest, like, how old is, what's his name?
Terry Collins. Yeah, he's pretty old. What is it? Terry Collins is.
No, not Terry Collins.
Terry Collins.
Oh, yeah, it is Terry.
He's right. 68. Man, he's pretty old, man.
Yeah, it's pretty old. Damn. Terry's pretty old.
Well, but, you know, well, you know what? I miss managers smoking cigarettes. Too.
Buck Showalter is your man.
He is. He's not that old. He's like 60. I mean, I guess it's kind of old. They're like hiring like 38-year-olds now as managers.
Yeah, I know, man. You gotta have a cool manager like Joe Madden.
Exactly. Joe Madden is like the coolest dude ever. He's like the cool, like your friend's like cool dad who's like,
right,
you know, going to be 70 soon, but he's still like going to like Bonnaroo and like, you know,
in a helicopter.
Yeah. Like popping mollies at festivals and stuff. He would totally do that. You know he would.
Joe Madden. Yeah. Joe Madden is in his winery doing ecstasy.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Well, all while thinking of different crazy leadoff hitters and batting the pitcher eighth.
Yeah, exactly. But
yeah, back to Luis Castillo. Back to Luis Castillo. This is a pitcher, Luis Castillo, a young man by the name of Luis Castillo. So he's a top prospect. For the Reds, and he's making his big league debut against the Nats. Just about him for a minute. So he in AAA this year was only walking 1.5 batters per 9 innings. And in his last 10 starts, he has 60 Ks to 10 walks over 56 innings. So you like that 6-1 strikeout to walk ratio, more strikeouts than innings pitched. You know, that really nice small walk number. So, you know, he's got strikeout stuff and good command. And in spring training, he was hitting 100 miles an hour with his fastball and has a nice changeup. So he's got that changing speeds, different looks. And the Reds, actually, I was reading an article about him. He was using a curveball and they had him ditch that for a slider. And that really made big changes for him, this season so far. You know, we don't know a lot about Castillo. I don't know a lot about Castillo. And he obviously hasn't had anything on the big league level yet. But I love his pedigree. And then the other thing is the Nationals, like the Nats are a team you want to target with righties. Lefties are the hand you want to target with their bats. I mean, I'm not saying that the Nationals, you just fade them against righties, but, you know, this is a situation where you've got a Minsal pitcher that nobody knows anything about other than, you know, like minor league prospect geeks. And he's, you know, he's Minsal, and he's going against a team that is good, and they're perceived to be really, really good, but they're just fine. They're solid against right-handed pitchers, okay? Yeah. So I think that this is an advantageous spot for DFSers because there is upside there for something decent. If we can get him in the 30-point-ish, 35-point range at Min Sal, like, give me a break. That's crazy. And his ownership is going to be minuscule. So am I looking to use him on FanDuel? I mean, like, maybe, I don't know, like in a small GPP I don't really care much about. But I feel like using him on DraftKings as your SP2, or if you are playing FanDuel mix-up and you need to use two starting pitchers, I like him. And here's another one that would be crazy low-owned, would be to pair him with Strasburg. You know, I know that you and I are a little worried about Strasburg, but that's one way to get differentiation and mix-up. Or in DraftKings is to pair up the pitchers going against each other and hope for a pitcher's duel, because you know you're getting like the likelihood that people are going for pitchers facing off against each other because they want to get, you know, the chance at two wins is low, so it's an option. But yeah, Luis Castillo, what do you think about that?
I actually think the opposite of you. I'm actually interested in the Nats here. You know, and like, you know, this is here. We got to hear both sides of the
story. Shoot. And you know what? I'm looking at your notes and you said that he hasn't even started in AAA this year.
Yeah. This is where like I read about Castillo and I've read all the same stuff as you.
I misspoke.
This kid has heat. He has absolute heat. Like, and he has been excellent. You're right. Like, he has thrown a ton of heat. He has shown control. He is one of the best prospects. Like, there's a lot of – he was a part of the Dan Straley trade. And there's a lot of people right now that are basically like, the Reds got the better end of the deal. Like, this is a bad situation for the Miami Marlins. Like, this is not a good trade for them. And you know, I think that it's interesting because I don't know what to make of this kid. Like, he's a high pedigree prospect, but he's only started all the way up in AAA, or excuse me, in AA. You know, and now he's got to go into Nationals Park where we just talked about it. It's 85 degrees, the wind is blowing out, and he's got to face Bryce Harper. You know, I'm going to put my money on the experience here. Mm-hmm. But I understand what you're saying too. I mean,
now you know what? I'm actually like looking again.
Because let me just say
I'm looking again and my assessment of the Nationals against right-handed pitchers was a bit off. They're this season versus right-handers, they're second in OPS. And fifth in WOBA or WRC plus and third in WOBA. So yeah. So I don't know. Like, it's definitely a dart throw for sure.
Here's the thing. Okay. This harkens back to me for the first Denelson Lamet start.
Yeah.
Remember the first Denelson Lamet start against the Mets when we had this kid with massive K rate coming into the league who was just basically a fastball changeup pitcher. You were like, wow, he's going to be good. He comes out against the Mets. He destroys the Mets in that game. He gets, you know, 8 Ks. He goes 6 innings, whatever the case may be. The Mets hit him for 1 run. You know, but then he regressed in a massive way in his other starts. And he's got some rough batted ball data actually now because, you know, you figure out what the kid throws. I think he has an advantage, but at the same time, like, I think that Washington right now is just an offense that is too hot. They don't strike out very much. You know, 31% hard contact rate against righties, which is average. It's not elite, but a 108 WRC plus. They're at home. The wind is blowing out. You know, I think Harper and Murphy are the obvious plays, you know, and then I think people are really interested in Trey Turner these days because he's just been playing extremely well. Brian Goodwin, he's cheap. He's a nice fill-in. But I think one of my favorite bats is probably Zimmerman. because he hits righties really well. And in fact, I tried to do some comps here, like for right-handed power pitchers, right? So my immediate thought was, okay, DeGrom, because you got a divisional guy who throws heat, you know, that they see on a regular basis. So how do people fare against DeGrom? And Zim crushes DeGrom. He's hit him really hard this year. So in that respect, I think Zimmerman might be one of my favorite spots. So, you know, if you can get Goodwin, Harper, and Zimmerman, I think that that's a pretty affordable, albeit, you know, stud stack that has a lot of upside. And then, you know, you get the Reds bullpen, which is not elite necessarily. So I think it's an interesting spot for Washington in this one. But I hear what you're saying. Castillo's interesting. I'll be watching for sure. I mean, I wavered on whether or not I could start against an unknown, but I think Vegas is telling us that it's not a bad idea. So what about you, Fern? Where are you looking for bats?
Yeah, and just one last word on that. You know, and normally, you know, we talk about, I always mention this in the cheat sheet, you know, whenever you are stacking, or whenever you are pitching a questionable pitcher, you want to like hedge your bet and stack in like a different lineup of his opposition. So like, for example, if you're starting Joe Schmo, you know, with the hopes that he'll have a nice outing, you know, hedge stack with another team, like with the team that he's facing. You know, and I think Washington is going to be pretty popular as a stack. So maybe you can hedge it with your Dinelson-Lamet logic and hope that Castillo can have like a serviceable outing. But yeah, you know, I'm on your side, but I'm still gonna throw a dart out there. Just and cross my fingers and cross my fingers and hope to die. Let me see here. So yeah, as far as my stud stack, I'm going with the Rays against Ubaldo. Just looking at the Rays, as far as let's just start off with Ubaldo. Okay, Ubaldo is horrible. He is not a good pitcher at all. You know, he is throwing, you know, I'm sorry, I'm like trying to get myself resituated here. Yeah. So Ubaldo, over the last 15 days or so, he lost a spot in the rotation to, Alec Asher. Alec Asher has since been demoted to the bullpen, and Jimenez has been reinserted into the rotation. You know, he's at this point in his career, I mean, he is just a gas can. I mean, he has been for quite some time now, but he's pretty much just playing out the rest of his contract. I mean, the Orioles are paying him $13 million a year. They're just going to play it out. You know, they're not the kind of team that's going to designate for assignment a $13 million pitcher. They're going to play it out. And so for those of you who are wondering when he's going to lose his job, when he's going to be off the team, like, don't count on it anytime soon. So as long as he's in that rotation, we can stack against him, and the Rays are a perfect team to stack against him because, A, you know, his pitch speed is in the low to mid-90s. And when bats hit balls coming at them 94, 95 miles an hour, they're going to go far. The distance, his average distance lately is 230 feet, which is really bad. In fact, of all the pitchers on the slate today, he is giving up the fourth longest average batted ball, just behind Mike Foltynewicz, Dinelson-Lamet, who is not playing today, and Masahiro Tanaka, who you are going to talk about in just a moment.
Uh-huh.
And so I have no reservations with stacking up Rays against him. I mean, Ubaldo is just not a good pitcher. So looking at the Rays bats themselves, as far as BBP goes, Logan Morrison owns him. Colby Rasmus, who's banged up right now but is reportedly going to be playing in this weekend series, also has some positive numbers. And then Evan Longoria and Corey Dickerson have some nice power numbers. Corey Dickerson's batting average is really low. We don't really care about that. The bottom line is he has a 200-plus ISO against Jimenez. And then as far as a little – I have a little Fangraphs study that I do, like a saved player search with different parameters that I like to use to hopefully kind of like predict – you know, some home runs, like based on, you know, fly ball rate and hard hit balls versus soft contact. And the Rays have four guys over the last 30 days who are putting up elite numbers as far as hard contact and hitting fly balls. Logan Morrison, who I just mentioned has great BVP against Jimenez, is crushing the ball. Not that anyone is surprised by that. Derek Norris and Steven Souza are also hitting the ball very hard. Derek Norris, you know, misses the ball a lot, but when he does hit it, it goes far. And then Colby Rasmus, who also has good BVP, as I mentioned previously, against Jimenez. So you have two guys who not only are crushing it against everybody right now in Morrison and Rasmus, but they also have BVP against Jimenez in a solid sample size. You know, they do share the same division. So I see no reason why, you know, a stack of like Lomo and Rasmus and then using anyone from like the group of Longoria, Dickerson, Norris, and Souza is not a bad play whatsoever. And then, you know, if you wanted to, I mean, you could always, you know, with Kiermaier still on the shelf, go down to our boy, Malik Smith, because Jimenez can be run on. And then there's also, what's his face? The Featherston kid who's been, every time I'm looking at my freaking phone, when I'm sitting around after lineups lock, looking at my, my push notifications from Twitter, this Featherston character pops up and I'm like, what the hell is a Featherston?
What is a Featherston?
What is a Featherston?
And Featherston is a Ray who hits home runs, right? And welcome to the club. That's what the Rays do.
Yeah. So Featherston, it might be a nice play too. He's only 2,300 and we're not sure if Tim Beckham is going to be suiting up. He's on the shelf with an injury.
I'm okay fading Tim Beckham.
Yeah.
24% home run to fly ball ratio. One of the best in baseball. They are number two in hard contact against right-handed pitching in the last 14 days. I love the Rays in this spot. And I think you know, you mentioned this, but the one guy that I always feel like there's massive leverage with here is Steven Souza.
They look similar.
There's a lot of comparisons.
Right.
No, it's Steven Souza at the five hole, because Souza smashes righties. He's actually not that great against lefties.
No.
He smashes righties though, and that's the thing that I think people forget. You know, so I love Steven Souza here. 300 ISO, 420 WOBA on the season to right-handed pitching, and that's in 170 at-bats. That is the team high for ISO against righties. Well, no, excuse me, Logan Morrison. So, I mean, you just I love the Rays in this spot. They are home runs waiting to happen. I think that people will be on them, but I think with all the options on the slate and their prices being up, I think you are actually going to get them at pretty low ownership. If you go with a Dickerson, Morrison, Souza, Rasmus, people just don't want to pay that much for the Rays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll play Malik Smith at 2.9, but they're not going to pay 4K for all those guys. And if you're willing to pay 4K for those guys, then I think you're going to have a really nice night against Ubaldo. And then you get the rest of the fucking bullpen for the Orioles, which has just been getting shelled lately.
Yeah, and you know, the good thing, too, about stacking the Rays is Buck is – you know, when the bullpen has been used heavily, and boy, have they been used heavily, Buck has no problem with making his starter, you know, eat shit for four or five innings and give up eight earned runs. So, yeah, I mean, I don't care. Like, Jimenez is going to take one for the team. You know, right. there's right. You know, what is he, 30, 32, 33 years old? Like, he's not like a young arm they're trying to protect. Like, he's going to get his 100, 110 pitches in, and he's going to eat it. And the Rays could put up 6 or 7 earned runs on him.
All you need to know is the other, not long ago, a couple weeks ago, when we were talking about, I was talking on Twitter to Casey Bogeslaw, and all Casey Bogeslaw said about Ubaldo was, "Oh, poor Ubaldo," because he gets shelled. And, you know, if there's a guy who knows pitchers that get shelled, it's the barrel alert man, yeah. Casey Bogeslaw. So Casey doesn't like Ubaldo.
He's like the nicest guy. Casey's a nice guy, but Ubaldo, like, when you look at his post-game conferences, he's like the most soft-spoken. He's just like, "My name is Ubaldo Jimenez," you know? He's like so soft-spoken, and he's like the nicest guy. He's like all Christian and everything, and like, and I feel so bad for him because he just like gets to, he's gonna get destroyed and nothing can save him.
No, he's gonna get destroyed. He's got one of the worst fastballs on the slate. All of his pitches are grading out below average.
They're just straight 94 mile an hour fastballs.
Yeah, and that's, by the way, that's Colby Rasmus right there. Rasmus loves a fastball. So, all right, pivoting off, this is I love this spot, and I'm gonna have a lot of Texas Rangers. And I've been watching the Rangers. I haven't dipped my feet in. I was on them earlier this year because it's just like this offense should be really good. Well, it's amazing how an offense turns around when Carlos Gomez and Adrian Beltre are all of a sudden healthy and batting 4-5 every single day. They get really good really fast. This team like has put up tons of runs in this homestand that they had with Seattle and Toronto, a couple of 10-run games. They're going up to Yankee Stadium, which is a great ballpark for home runs, and they're going up against the guy who's giving up the highest home run rate on the slate. That's Masahiro Tanaka. Tanaka actually, I think, leads the league right now in home runs allowed, if I'm correct. And he has, on this slate, he has the highest home run per nine at 2.47. He has one of the highest batted ball distances on the slate and one of the highest hard contact rates as well. In the last two games, where is this number or last? I can't find it. Here it is. 40% hard contact rate, 40% fly ball rate, the batted ball distance of 241 feet. That is the worst on the slate in the last 15 days. Well, Mike Foltynewicz is a close second, yeah. Actually just edged him out. But Texas, man, these guys are really hitting the ball well. So I like the Rangers here in Yankee Stadium. Carlos Gomez might be one of the hottest hitters in baseball, and I don't know how many people have caught on. I think people who play every single day have caught on, but I don't know if the rest of the world has caught on because he was on the DL for so long. In the last 4 weeks, his ISO has been 588. Now, I realize that that's not a stat that normalizes, but it just goes to show you how much power Gomez has in his bat right now. Since returning from the DL in June, 9 hits in 6 games, 5 of which were home runs, 14 RBIs. So you're talking about almost a home run per game and multiple RBIs per game. Adrian Beltre, he's the same story. Multiple hits in multiple games. He's been knocking in runs as well. They're both hitting right-handed pitching as righties. Gomez hasn't scored less than 9 FanDuel points once since he returned. And he had 54 FanDuel points yesterday with a double dong. You know, against Tanaka, I love Carlos Gomez. I like Adrian Beltre. Rougned Odor is also heating up, and he's been in the heart of that order. And Sinsoo Chu, man, he's one of the most overlooked leadoff men in the league. And, you know, Spector always advocates for Sinsoo Chu because he is definitely, like, a very, very consistent bat to have in your lineup. Spector, I think, tweeted out some statistic like he's reached safely in like the last 17 games or something.
Super safe.
Yeah, it's unbelievably safe. You got to pay for these guys. You know, they're all like in this 3.6, 3.7 range. But for me, Chu, Odor, Beltre, Gomez, you get two outfielders, second base, third base right there. You know, and I think the nice thing is that a lot of people are going to probably go towards the Yankees at home, right? That ownership is always there. The Yankees at home are always in play. But, you know, they're really hard to wrap your head around. It's really frustrating to play the Yankees these days because I was all in on Gary Sanchez yesterday. And, of course, it's Judge that goes yard. It's tricky. And I don't know necessarily that I would much rather play the Rangers at lower ownership than the Yankees at higher ownership in this spot. What do you think, Fern?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Darvish, he's pitching well. Like, Darvish is, I don't know. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be, like, an elite all-around pitcher. He has bouts of inefficiency, and he can give up the long ball. I mean, he's going to strike guys out forever and always. But the Yankees are so hot. I mean, they are just such a dangerous team, and it's just not worth the risk, coupled with, as you mentioned, the ownership. I mean, people just love to roster the Yankees, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I roster the Yankees all the time. But I just think, yeah, like the Rangers are in such a better spot. I mean, they just the likelihood that they put up a big number, you know, is in, I think is much higher because Darvish could come out and have, you know, all his pitches, you know, working for him. And it doesn't matter if it's the 1927 Yankees, like a great pitcher is always going to be beating hot teams. So,
yep, I agree.
Yeah. Nice call. So yeah, Texas against Tanaka. I have that in my notes too. Like, and I have that in my, not so obvious pitchers to target section, because I do think people have a Yankees bias even towards Tanaka still. Like, people just aren't getting the clue, like, he is definitely a targetable gas can. Totally. So at any rate, the team that I want to focus on as a grout stack here is the Angels against Rick Porcello. So I'm just trying to pull up my Fangraphs page here. So, yeah. So, looking at the Angels, you know, people definitely perceive them as a weak team. But they are, you know, hitting the ball for more power than they were earlier in the no Mike Trout era. You know, lately they've been hitting it with authority, looking at a couple guys in particular. You know, Albert Pujols is starting to barrel up the ball a lot more lately. You know, ever since he got number 600 out of his system, you know, he's starting to barrel it up more. Cole Calhoun is really hitting the ball well. You know, and then, of course, there's guys like Cameron Maben and Yunel Escobar who are also, you know, just making solid contact. And here's the thing is the Angels, I just don't think they're ever going to be, you know, at the top of any list for power and efficiency, you know, a devastating offense. But they are on a little heater right now. I mean, they just did abuse Luis Severino and what's his face? The other dude, freaking Michael Pineda.
Yeah,
and they were two chalk pitchers that completely crapped the bed. So the Angels are definitely a team that we can sneakily use in our lines in GPPs for sure. And so who are they facing? They're facing Rick Porcello. And Rick Porcello has not been in a good state all season long. You know, the gap between his hard and soft contact has just basically been a giant chasm. Did I pronounce that properly? Chasm or chasm?
Chasm or chasm, whatever you want to
do. Tomato, tomato. It's a wide gap between his hard and soft contact. And for good pitchers, we like to see their hard and soft contact as close as possible. And Porcello's is giving up a ton of hard contact and not a lot of soft contact. And it's continuing to trend in the direction of we want to target him for that regard. And then his swinging strike rate has steadily ticked down since the start of the season. In fact, right now, this is the first time since early April that he's below his season average of about 10.5%. So he is seeing his swinging strike rate go down. And teams are making contact against him at an ever-increasing rate. So he's just getting worse and worse as the season goes on as far as contact being made against him, his inability to generate swings and misses, and the quality of contact against his pitches. So Porcello is just he's not a pitcher that we want to roster at all because of those factors. And then there's going to be the Porcello truthers out there that just can't get a clue that the guy is just not a good pitcher right now. And then The other thing is that his salary is still in the mid eights, 8,400, which right now he is a 7K, $6,800 pitcher on FanDuel. So I just love, you know, an Angel stack, even a mini stack would be fine because Pujols, Calhoun, you know, the other guys are relatively inexpensive. Valbuena. Yeah, definitely. Valbuena is super cheap. I think he's in the mid twos.
Yeah, and you get them. This is the thing that I think is interesting about, and we saw this for the Angels. And, you know, I wish I had been more bullish on the Angels.
I said it in the cheat sheet the other day of stacking against Pineda, and I freaking didn't even do it in any of my lines. And I was thinking when I saw that, like, shit, man, I said it, and I agree with you, man. I wish I was more bullish on them as well.
I think the thing that we have to remember is playing in Los Angeles. That park is huge. All of a sudden, you get into some of these small ballparks. And balls that, you know, it's warm, it's humid on the East Coast. You get in a small ballpark like Yankee Stadium. All of a sudden, some of these balls that these guys hit that are, you know, just deep, deep fly outs in L.A. turn into home runs. And that's contagious, man. These guys are hitting the ball a lot harder than we think. I mean, they are... they've got a 34% hard contact rate against right-handed pitching in the last 2 weeks. So that is comparable to Toronto, Minnesota, and Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Would you start Cleveland, Minnesota, or Toronto against Rick Porcello? Hell yeah, you would start any of those offenses against them. And, you know, the thing is all of a sudden, you know, we get this sense that the Angels are you know, not a team that can necessarily show a lot of power, but, you know, they've got a 19% home run to fly ball ratio. Yes, they have trouble keeping it off the they have trouble getting it off the ground, but Rick Porcello is the kind of guy that's going to let you really, you know, lift the ball because of just the way he pitches right now. And so I love this call. I think it's definitely a leverage spot. It's very similar to, you know, the Texas versus the Yankees. You know, you have two visiting teams in these matchups that may go overlooked for the home teams, right? The Red Sox at home, the Yankees at home, people love that shit. And they could be really good tonight. Like, let's not get it twisted. Boston and New York may be really, really lighting it up tonight. However, you know that you're going to get lower ownership on the visiting teams in Texas and LA. You know you get the ninth inning. You know, you probably get the price you're going to get the price discount. So I like that call.
Yeah, I mean, Boston is minus 170 on the money line, which I think is that is the sixth best, the sixth highest favored team on the slate. So, you know, as the money line goes, ownership goes.
Yeah.
And you are definitely going to benefit using Angels and GPPs because people are going to be all over Red Sox. And I mean, I said it when I talked about Alex Meyer. Like, I just think that this could be a trap game for the Red Sox, a trap series, because this is a I mean, this Angels team, like you said it, Sean, I mean, they're hitting the ball hard, and then tonight they got a decent pitcher on the mound.
Right, in a great ballpark. So, all right, Fern, we got a lot of, like, pivots, one-offs, spots that we want to talk about. So let's go through some of these quick hits,
yeah.
The things that, you know, like, we have to address. And I've got two right off the bat, okay? One is, I think there's massive leverage in this Seattle-Houston game. And there's a couple things that I really like here that are going on. Okay, Joe Musgrove in name, I think people are really interested in, you know, I think people still think that Musgrove is a halfway decent pitcher. XFIP and Sierra are up at 4.5 and 4.6. His batted ball distance is, his hard hit rate in his last two starts has been 53%. He's got a batted ball distance of 224 feet, an average exit velocity of 93 miles per hour. Okay, you put that up against Seattle, who at home against righties has really been hitting the ball pretty well. You know, they have all of these lefties in their lineup. Jean Segura is finally healthy. I think that Seattle is in an interesting spot. Robinson Cano went yard last night. I still like Kyle Seager, even though he's been kind of mediocre. So I'm into the Ben Gamel, Robinson Cano, possibly Kyle Seager there as well. Some of these lefties against Musgrove. I also really like the Astros. I think the Astros go completely under-owned tomorrow night because they're going up against King Felix, man. King Felix is back from the DL, but like King Felix is not the same pitcher that he was in years previous, and this season has been a problem for him. He's seen the strikeouts go way down, 18%. You know, he's seen the fly balls go up, the ground balls go down. 27% home run to fly ball ratio. He's just not the same pitcher. Do I think that they're going to, you know, destroy him? No, but I do think that Houston's offense against a righty is underrated and intensely dangerous. We saw what they did to Jesse Hahn yesterday in one inning, 10 runs. I mean, this team is just a nightmare once they start getting on base. 37% hard contact in the last couple days. So Houston, Seattle is very interesting. I also really like the Miami bats again against Lackey. I know they burned me last night, but I think we go back. And it's Justin Bour for me. He has two homers off of Lackey in six plate appearances. So that's one per game against Lackey. I really like Justin Bour in this spot as well. And I, you know, Lackey had a good start recently against the Mets, but I just don't think he's that good this year.
Yeah. I just to comment on what you just offered us, I love the call with the Marlins against Lackey. You know, he's giving up a ton of hard contact and just not able to induce soft contact. And it's going to be a warm evening in Chicago, or excuse me, in Miami. I mean, the roof is probably going to be closed. So that might not even be an issue. But yeah, Real Muto's got some nice BVP against him. Gordon and Yelich have seen him, and you know, they can definitely do some damage as left-handed bats. And then, yeah, definitely. Like, I think with Felix, like with King Felix, like he's still crafty. I mean, he doesn't have the stuff he once did. He's crafty though. And I feel like those crafty veteran pitchers, you don't want to use like the middle of the order studs. If you're trying to target them, you want to use like, lower order guys. So I feel like Evan Gattis could have a nice game, or like maybe Carlos Beltran. I mean, obviously any of the bats are usable against King Felix just coming off the DL. Like, come on, you know, like, what do you expect from him? Yeah. And then Joe Musgrove, definitely like another kind of gas can, just like fastball kind of pitcher. I really like the Brewers against Foltynewicz. Folty is giving up home runs. I mean, giving up hard contact. His swinging strike rate is plummeting. He kind of peaked there at a nice number, like 11%, back in May, and then he just plummeted. His contact rate has skyrocketed. You know, he's just not a good pitcher right now. And the Brewers' left-handed bats are going to look really nice playing in Atlanta. What the hell is the stadium called again? Sun something?
SunTrust.
Yeah, SunTrust, lefty haven. Definitely a nice park for guys like Eric Thames and Travis Shaw, maybe even the nerd boy, Eric Sogard. Keon Broxton's got really nice hard contact lately. So I like stacking up some Brewers against Folty. And then another guy that I like to target is Adam Wainwright. Adam Wainwright sucks right now.
The whole St. Louis rotation is bordering on like absolutely disastrous.
Yeah, and Waino has a lot of history with these Pirates bats. Jordy Mercer has really excelled against him. Andrew McCutchen, you know, I know we like prefer to use him against lefties, but he's seen a ton of Adam Wainwright. He has the most plate appearances of any batter on the slate against a pitcher with this Wainwright matchup. So he's hitting the ball hard as shit lately, and he does well against Waino. Josh Harrison's hitting it hard too, and he's got a lot of history against Waino. And then Polanco's swinging a good bat. So I like the Pirates against Waino. And then the Cubbies against Jose Urena. Urena's not terrible, but he's not good either. Like, he's definitely a bat that we want to, I mean, a pitcher that we want to target with some of these guys. So Addison Russell just had a huge day, and he's really hitting the ball hard, and he's still under 3K. You know, and then Rizzo, Bryant, and Happ, the usual suspects. And then one more for you guys. The Athletics against Mike Pelfrey. Someday, Sean, it's going to give. It's going to give. Mike Pelfrey, for the love of God, like, he knows what he's doing out there. You know, he's 32, 33 years old. He's a veteran. He knows what he's doing. Like, he's not some 23-year-old schlub. You know, he's a veteran. But he just doesn't have good stuff. Like, he's going to get hit hard one of these days. And I think it's going to be against this Athletics team. You know, the A's are good against right-handed pitchers. They do strike out a lot, but Pelfrey doesn't strike anybody out. You know, Jed Lowry, Rajai Davis, Matt Joyce have seen a bunch of him in their careers. And then they're one of the, you know, top teams of hard contact in baseball. I mean, you know, Ryan Healy, Yonder Alonso, Matt Joyce, Chris Davis, Chad Pinder. I mean, you know, even Josh Fegley, if you want to, like, punt catcher. Yeah. So I love using the A's against Pelfrey because I think people are starting to, like, get scared of targeting Pelfrey. It just, one of these days it's going to happen, and I think it could be tonight. I
want to talk about the opposite side of the ball there. The White Sox, people still don't realize how good the White Sox are at hitting the baseball. I mean, they just put up 10 runs yesterday against the Twins after that rain delay. Matt Davidson continues to be one of the hottest batters in baseball at 3.1 at first base. So the two guys who hit righties in this lineup are Abisel Garcia, Matt Davidson.
I mean, Davidson's really the only one I feel comfortable using against righties.
Well, those two, 4 and 6, right? And Abreu to some degree, but why pay for Abreu when Davidson is hotter and cheaper?
Dude, Davidson is like, I mean, he's arguably like the hottest hitter in baseball. He could be the hottest hitter in baseball, but I mean, in a DFS point of view, like, his price is still minuscule. And he's crushing it lately. I tweeted out last night, and my freaking Twitter is not working right now. That sounded kind of sexual right there. But where is it? I don't know. It's if you want to look, it's on my Twitter page. Here we go. Okay, yeah. Matt Davidson he's averaged over his last like 7 or 8 games, 0 soft contact.
That's insane.
0% soft contact, and 60, I'm looking at a graph, so I can't see the exact number, but over 60% hard contact. I mean, basically his last week, week and a half, he has just been crushing the ball.
So here it is, Fern. You ready? I'm looking at since the Baltimore series. In the Baltimore series, he homered 4 days in a row. Okay, 4 days in a row. Every game in that Baltimore series, he homered with a minimum of 24 points in each one of those games. He homered again in the Toronto series. He homered twice in the Minnesota series. So we're toting together 10 games. In 10 games, he has 7 homers. Okay, 7 homers, and in those games, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 15 hits. 15 hits in 10 games, 7 homers.
Dude, and his salary since that...
3.1!
I know, but here's the thing. His salary has gone up $600.
It's the FanDuel. You know what? So part of it is, guys, one of the things that we have to realize is part of what the FanDuel algorithm accounts for is ownership percentage.
Nobody owns him because he's like, here's the thing is when you got a team like Toronto or like Cleveland, where you have two starting first baseman eligible batters, like people are always using Edwin and Santana. People are always using Alonso and Healy. People are always using Smoke and Kendrys.
Morales.
Right. Yeah. But people consistently overlook Matt Davidson. And he is just on an epic heater right now that you cannot ignore. Dare I say he's cash usable tonight against Jarrell Cotton.
Jarrell Cotton, who just, I mean, the kid is going to be good one day. Because he's got some heat, but like it's just not now. No. It's just not now. And he's gotten lit in a couple serious starts here. And we look at very average pitcher with a massive fly ball rate, 33% hard contact, 5.35 xFIP. I don't think Cotton's going to be able to necessarily get through this one very easily with the White Sox at home, which don't forget that ballpark is very hitter friendly, very hitter friendly. So, we got to look at the White Sox here tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's put a bow in this thing because I probably got a baby with a poopy diaper needs daddy to come and get that thing out of there.
Yeah, get the rescue mission. Let's head over to FanDuel. We're going to throw together a quick lineup. I think – oh, by the way, I forgot to mention this. Jimmy Nelson has been a fucking animal.
Yes.
Animal lately.
Yes.
And I am so mad that I forgot to talk about him during the pitcher breakdown. Do me a favor, guys. If you're listening to this show and you're in front of a computer, FanGraphs, Jimmy Nelson, game logs. The guy has been insane. And you're going, wait, Sean, but he's got to face a bunch of lefties down there in Atlanta. His K rate against lefties is unbelievable. Yes, there's hard contact, but his K rate against lefties like goes up to 30%. And his ground ball rate against righties is like almost above 50%. So Jimmy Nelson is a beast. I love him.
Yeah. I just sent you a link in Zencaster. I made a tweet last night about Jimmy Nelson. Jimmy Nelson demands your attention. And just looking at some of these graphs, I mean, his ERA and his xFIP are right next to each other. So he's pitching to what he should be, exactly. Which is in the mid twos. And he has progressively seen his swinging strike rate just skyrocket. And his soft contact is actually crossing over his hard contact. And when you are generating more soft contact than hard contact, you are good at baseball.
Wow. So, I just I love this guy. I think this is a really good spot for him. You know, there's just a lot of really, really, really good pitchers. Guys, by the way, if you're not following Fern, get over there because Fern is these tweets are really interesting. It's Matt Davidson and Jimmy Nelson. I love it. All right, anyway, let's go over to FanDuel. Let's get a lineup together. I mean, we could throw any one of these pitchers in here. Where do you think we should start? I mean,
man,
Jimmy Nelson, Alex Wood, Chris Archer, Michael Fulmer.
I like Alex Wood because we're saving some money and we're getting as much upside as the guys above him. You know, okay. I mean, compared to Archer, like you're saving $900 there. You know, that's pretty significant chunk of change.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. Now we're going to need a stud offense here, Fern. Where do you think your preferred 4-man or 3-man stack is coming from?
I'm just leaning towards the Rays. I mean, I'm not going to mess around here. I mean, the Orioles are giving up runs and Ubaldo Jimenez is on the mound. I mean, everyone's heard about the stat that they've given up 5 or more earned runs in like 15-20 straight games. So I'm thinking we go like Lomo and somebody.
Lomo, who knows if Rasmus is gonna play.
If Rasmus plays, I like him just because of his history against Jimenez.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go Lomo and then just anybody like Longo.
Do you wanna go Dickerson? Corey Dickerson. I mean, he feels like he is due.
Yeah,
man.
Let's go with the Dickster.
Dickster. I mean, you could go Steven Souza in there too. Oft overlooked, batting 5, and then you have basically the 3 best power bats in the Rays lineup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could go with a mini stack of this is a game where you can go one off all the way up to full 4-man stack.
Yep. I agree. I think the Rays are in play. I think also Derek Norris is absolutely, Derek Norris is definitely one of my favorite catchers on the night here. Okay. So Rays, I've got Lomo, Dickerson, and Souza. It's pretty expensive, but, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I'm down.
We're gonna need some savings, right? So we're looking for savings. A lower price offense that we need infield. We need second, third, short.
Let me just take a look here at shortstop. Once it loads, my internet is some garbage. Oh, I mean Addison Russell.
Yeah.
I'm
gonna say, like, I really feel like there's probably a punt shortstop on this slate that we can feel comfortable with. Featherston too, man, 2,300.
Featherston, Pinder against Pelfrey.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Mercer against Waino. There's the trio of $2,800 shortstops of Mercer, Russell, Pinder, maybe Tulo. I don't know about Tulo.
I like Chad Pinder. That's a good call. By the way, guys, the Diamondbacks are at home again against a righty. The thing is about this kid is he's really hard to get a read on. His data, the data on their guy, that their Phillies guy that they're hitting against.
Mike Leiter or whatever.
Weird. Yeah. It's weird. So I don't really know how to read it. I was writing about them and then I just kind of was like, and Vegas didn't like them at first, but that line has moved in their favor. So
you could also look at like Jose Reyes against Ty Blach.
Yeah, that's a good call. Ty Blach is really terrible.
Maybe somehow like Cliff Pennington starts against LA against Porcello and you get Minsal. Why don't we just go with like one of those 2,800 guys?
Yeah,
go up to Didi against Darvish.
But
that's kind of more of a GPP thing, I think.
I'm looking at Odor. It's kind of expensive. I mean, what if we did this? All right, so we're kind of spending a lot of money on Souza. What if we went to some of these Texas bats here, and we went to Beltre? Do you feel like we can do Beltre and Gomez?
Yeah, Gomez is really.
Or would you rather do?
Wait, so you Gomez? We saved $200 against Souza, which is nice.
Yeah, I know.
And Odor is pretty cheap, $3,400.
That's what I was kind of looking at.
You know, he's got that nice uppercut swing. I think he could hit one out. I kind of like I kind of like Gomez, Odor. Do you want to get Beltre in there?
We could get Beltre in there.
Why don't we just do this these two mini stacks for at first right now and then
right
move on to something else for now.
So if you need savings at third, okay, so third and short, I think we know. I mean, I'm interested in Luis Valbuena. I'm interested in Wilmer Flores. I think Valbuena might be my,
I might say this. Good. I will say this, though, is I like Josh Fegley against Pelfrey at 2,100 at catcher. They just DFA'd Vogt.
Did they really?
Yeah, he's gone.
That's rough.
So Fegley's going to be getting the lion's share of the starts now. I kind of like him, man. He's hitting the ball hard. He's got the job now, and he's almost min sal.
Yeah, wow.
And then you could pair him up with, like, Pinder and save a shit ton of money and get, like, upside because Pinder is 2,800. So if we did Pinder and Fegley, we now have 2,900 for – now we could find a – try to find a cheap outfielder or third base. See, with third base, I know Wilmer Flores is there.
Yeah, I know. Flores against Ty Blatch is very interesting, but he's been kind of cold recently.
You know who's not been cold? Nick Castellanos.
Yeah, he's interesting. Nick Castellanos and Ian Kinsler are very interesting, but they got Perdomo. That's just that ground ball machine.
Yeah, it's true.
There's such limited home run upside there.
So what about outfield? If we have look for cheap outfield, cheap, not cheap, but, you know, below 2,900 to bring our average up some.
Malik Smith is 2,900, and he's the leadoff bat in that Rays stack. Like, you know, you got to think that they're going to move that lineup. Malik Smith is I think fine.
Ooh,
you know,
yeah, I got one for you. Enrique Hernandez against Kyle Freeland, the lefty, and Hernandez
that's
is
not bad.
Hitting the ball hard too, and he's got and you get that Dodgers exposure.
Yeah, that's not a terrible spot either. I just keep coming back to Valbuena.
Yeah, I mean, Valbuena, I can't disagree with you. Valbuena against Porcello. All right, let's do Valbuena. Where is he? It's 2,700. And now we got 3,100 for our third outfielder. And we could probably get something nice.
Who do you have at shortstop, by the way?
Pinder.
Oh, Pinder. Yeah, chatty. Chatty Pinder. Well, so I have, yeah.
Plus,
so
man, we can get Colby Rasmus.
I know. That's what I'm looking at. Let's bet on Rasmus being in the lineup.
Yeah.
That's
I like this. Right, this is not bad.
No, this is not bad at all. Three-man Reyes stack, Morrison, Dickerson, Rasmus. Okay. Now, Rasmus is possibly not in the lineup. So you could go with Malik Smith, who's 2,800. Okay.
Max Kepler against Trevor Bauer right below.
Yep.
You could go. Yep. You could go Domingo or Hernan Perez against Foltynewicz. Although rather use a lefty.
Milwaukee. I'm definitely going to have a full four-man Milwaukee. And actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do Sogard, Thames, Shaw with Jimmy Nelson.
Nice. I like that. Oh, then but also so don't forget at 3,100 Chris Taylor against a lefty.
Oh, God, Chris Taylor. I love Chris Taylor. All right, so here's what we got right now, right? Punting catcher with Fegley, who's likely in the lineup, Chad Pinder, those two Oaklands against Pelfrey, cheap salary relief guys. Then you're full-on, three-man, four-man, but three-man Tampa Bay stack, Lomo, Dickerson, Rasmus, And then a pair of Texas batters, Odor and Gomez, two hot sticks right there. And betting on the fact that Luis Valbuena can take Rick Porcello out of the yard at least once, because he's been swinging a hot bat. He's 2,700, and he is in a great ballpark against a pitcher who gives up home runs. So this isn't bad. I mean, and just, guys, there's the thing about these slates. And Fern, I don't know how you feel about this approach to lineup construction, but if I'm sitting down and I'm making five lineups for a full slate or 15 games, in each one of those five lineups, I am probably going to have a full four-man stack or three-man stack minimum of my favorite, one of my favorite teams. And then because there's so many other spots and players that I like, I'm going to fill in around those with pairs and in one-offs.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to always, at the core of what I'm going to do, I'm going to attack an offense that I really like, which is why we're attacking Tampa Bay right here against Ubaldo. So
yeah, you kind of got to just, like, you know, I mean, it's not, I mean, you don't necessarily have to go all in with a particular foursome, but you want to find a team, you know, that you can go 1 through 9, 1 through 8, and mix things up over your 4, 5, 6, whatever lineups.
Right.
And just get exposure to a variety of guys in that one team. And then, yeah, as you said, you know, get some one-offs, get some mini stacks, you know, change up your pitchers, you know, maybe go for a high price guy and then get some cheapies and then go for a mid or low price guy and then, you know, upgrade, but keep your stack intact from your main team. So yeah, you know, variety, but also focusing in on one particular avenue to win.
Yep, I totally agree with that. I think you know, it's definitely, it's going to be a high scoring night. That's no, because you've got good pitching, and you've got a couple really, really bad pitchers. And I think you've got to find some leverage spots. And you know, one of the instant ways to get leverage, guys, is to go to road teams on the West Coast. So Houston and the Mets, Philadelphia in the desert. I mean, they're probably unbelievably cheap, and they were in Chase Field. So
yeah, I love, by the way, as a one-off, I love Aaron Alther. Crushes lefties. Patrick Corbin's meh.
Tommy Joseph's been waking up too. Tommy Joseph and Michael Franco have been waking up a little bit. They had a decent series in that St. Louis series. They woke up, you know.
Yeah.
And
if Patrick, you look Corbin, at Corbin's directional, the direction his hits go, he gives a lot of opposite field hits. So Odubel, the lefty lefty matchup, loves to go oppo.
Yeah.
Odubel and Daniel Nava love going oppo. Howie Kendrick does too, but he's got a really, he's like a big ground ball hitter. You could get a little sneaky with your Phillies.
Yeah. All right.
All right, bro.
All right, guys. That is it for us here. Plenty of ways to go. Fern, everybody's got to follow you at Josh Fern on Twitter. And hey, guys, good luck in your contest. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, indeed. Good luck, everybody. Have a good weekend.